strong. This is VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Anna Mateo and Jill Robbins. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Anna Mateo.
Books are a great way to escape everyday life. We get to experience new places, people, and situations outside of our own lives. Some readers escape with fantasy stories. Some like love stories. And some readers like murder mysteries, but not violent ones. So-called cozy mysteries provide readers with warmth and a sense of security. Think of a cozy bed with soft, thick covers to climb under when you are cold and tired. That's cozy. Cozies, as they are often called, are murder mysteries without a lot of blood or violence. So they are different than true crime stories and darker, more violent mysteries. Valerie Burns writes cozies under the name V.M. Burns. Her Mystery Bookshop series includes 6 stories. She recently talked to the Associated Press about cozy mysteries during the pandemic. Since the pandemic began in early 2020, she said more readers began to email her about her work. She thinks they might have been looking for more human connection, as COVID-19 restricted social interaction severely. Burns lives in the U.S. state of Tennessee and reads cozies herself. She knows that finding comfort in a murder story may sound strange. But the writer says solving a mystery can be fun and entertaining. She can read a cozy mystery and try to put together clues to solve it without all the violence many other murder mysteries include. She says it's basically a puzzle. The most important part of a cozy mystery is the protagonist, or the main character. In cozies, protagonists are usually women. The protagonist investigates the murders in cozies. Often the character is not a professional investigator. She is an amateur detective. They usually have a kind of job that gives them a lot of free time to find and follow clues. For the reader, smaller characters, like the protagonist's friends and neighbors, are also important. Readers often want to hang out with the detective and their community. The setting of a cozy is also very important. The stories usually take place in a village or a single neighborhood of a big city. It needs to have that cozy, small-town feel. The setting is often a place readers would want to visit. Also, cozies are quite clean. So offensive language and sexual situations are not part of the stories. The only offense is the murder. Murder is definitely dark, but in a cozy, The reader is with the protagonist every step of the way as each clue is revealed, says Michelle Vega. She works with several cozy writers as an editor. Vega calls cozy mysteries escapist perfection. Vega says you can enjoy the perfect cup of tea and pretend you're sitting in that comfy bookshop with the main character as she and her friends solve the crime. Comfy is a shortened form of the word comfortable. The roots of the cozy murder mystery field may have formed from early 20th century British mystery writers, including Agatha Christie and Dorothy L. Sayers. In television form, the cozy mystery can be seen in shows such as Midsummer Murders and Murder, She Wrote. I'm Ana Mateo.
The average life expectancy for people in the United States fell by 1.5 years in 2020. The decrease marks the largest one-year drop since World War II, public health officials said. Experts with the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC, released the report on life expectancy Wednesday. The decrease was mainly caused by the COVID-19 health crisis. Health officials said the pandemic was responsible for close to 74% of the life expectancy decline. Life expectancy is an estimate of the average number of years a baby born in a given year might expect to live. It is a useful method to show a country's health. The number can be influenced by long-term health issues, such as weight problems. It also can be influenced by more temporary threats like pandemics or wars, which might not affect those newborns in their lifetimes. More than 3.3 million Americans died last year. That is far more than any other year in U.S. history. COVID-19 made up about 11% of those deaths. For many years, U.S. life expectancy was rising. In 2019, the estimate was 78 years, 10 months. Last year, the CDC said, it dropped to about 77 years, 4 months. The decrease among Black Americans and Hispanic Americans was greater than the national average. The number for both populations dropped by 3 years. Life expectancy among Black Americans has not fallen so much in 1 year since the 1930s, during the Great Depression. Black life expectancy dropped last year to 71 years and 10 months. It has not been that low since 2000. Hispanic Americans have a longer life expectancy than white or Black Americans. Health officials only started measuring Hispanic life expectancy 15 years ago. The 3-year drop measured in 2020 is the largest 1-year decrease on record.
Reporters writing news stories must be careful not to say someone is guilty before a trial in a court of law gives a decision. The expressions we use to talk about crime and punishment use combinations of prepositions and verbs. Today, we will look at some of these special patterns. You will often find the word suspect used as both a noun and a verb in news stories about a crime. As a noun, it is the person officials think may have done the crime. We use the preposition in with the noun form of suspect. For example,
the suspect in the robbery ran away.
As a verb, it is the act of believing someone is guilty of a crime or of doing something wrong. We use the preposition of with the verb form suspect. And you often hear the passive verb form.
Susan is suspected of selling drugs.
You will also notice that the noun and verb are pronounced differently. The noun has stress on the first syllable, suspect. The verb has stress on the second syllable, suspect. Another word you will notice in news stories is allege. Before a jury or a judge gives a decision, a reporter cannot say that someone has committed a crime. So the media use this word to show someone is a suspect. A person is alleged to have done something. For example,
Charles was alleged to have stolen the money.
When the police catch a suspect, we say they were arrested or put under arrest. If the reason for the arrest is given, you will find the preposition for nearby. Here is a sentence from our story on the murder of the Haitian president.
Among the suspects arrested for Moise's killing are 23 former Colombian soldiers.
The next word you will hear often is accuse, or to say that someone is guilty of a crime or a bad quality. The preposition following the object of this verb is of. Here is a sentence from a recent news story.
The United States and its major allies have accused China of working with criminal hackers to carry out major computer attacks worldwide.
The object of that sentence is China, so the preposition of comes after it. Anyone can accuse someone of a crime, but only an official can charge someone with wrongdoing. Here, you will find the preposition with following the object, as in this sentence from a story on the police officers involved in the death of George Floyd.
All four officers are charged with failure to provide Floyd with medical care.
After a suspect is charged, they must tell the court whether they are guilty or not. To plead guilty is to take the blame or responsibility for a crime. The Associated Press Guide for Writers says that the past tense for the legal word is pleaded. About half the time, you will read or hear people using pled as the past tense, which also is used. Our question is, what is the correct preposition to follow pleaded guilty? Here is one example from a story about people accused of leading protests in Hong Kong.
Joshua Wong pleaded guilty to organizing and taking part in the June 2019 demonstration outside Hong Kong's police headquarters.
When we use the word guilty, the preposition to comes before the condemned act. But when what follows is the word charges or crime, the preposition may be of. Here is an example from our story about the Bubble Man of San Francisco.
Later in life, he was found guilty of a crime and served time in prison.
I do not want to end this lesson on a down note, so I will give you one more verb pattern. After serving time, a criminal may be released from prison or jail. Recently, we reported this about several Hong Kong activists.
Conditions for their temporary release from jail include that they do not leave Hong Kong and that they hand over all travel documents.
My final advice is to do everything by the book. That means to follow the rules and stay out of trouble. And that's Everyday Grammar. I'm Jill Robbins.
For years, our American history series, The Making of a Nation, has been one of the most popular programs from VOA Learning English. The series started in 1969. Today, we start our series again from the beginning. Generations of schoolchildren have been taught that Christopher Columbus discovered the New World. In fact, the second Monday in October is celebrated as a national holiday to honor the European explorer. But October also has a lesser-known observance. October 9th is Leif Erikson Day. So who was Leif Erikson? Today, Steve Ember tells us about him and other early European explorers.
Leif Erikson was a Norse explorer who sailed around the northeastern coast of what we now call North America about 1,000 years ago. He and his crew returned to Greenland with news of a place he called Vinland. Following his explorations, a few settlements were built. Experts digging in eastern Canada in the 1960s found the remains of a village with houses like those in Greenland, Iceland, and Norway. But the Norse did not establish any permanent settlements in North America. Today, as we relaunch our series, we begin with the story of early European explorers in North America. In the 11th century, Europe was beginning a period of great change. One reason was the religious wars known as the Crusades. These were military campaigns by Christians to force Muslims out of the Holy Land in the Middle East. The Crusades began at the end of the 11th century. They continued for about 200 years. One effect of the presence of European armies in the Middle East was to increase trade. This trade was controlled by businessmen in Venice and other city-states in Italy. The businessmen earned large profits by supplying the warring armies and by bringing goods from the East into Europe. When the European crusaders returned home, they brought with them some new and useful products. These included spices, perfumes, silk cloth, and steel products. These goods became highly valued all over Europe. The increased trade with the East led to the creation and growth of towns along the supply roads. It also created a large number of rich European businessmen. The European nations were growing. They developed armies and governments. These had to be paid for with taxes collected from the people. By the 15th century, European countries were ready to explore new parts of the world. The first explorers were the Portuguese. By 1400, they wanted to control the eastern spice trade. European businessmen did not want to continue paying Venetian and Arab traders for their costly spices. They wanted to set up trade themselves. If they could sail to Asia directly for these products, the resulting trade would bring huge profits.
The leader of Portugal's exploration efforts was Prince Henry, a son of King John I. He was interested in sea travel and exploration. He became known as Henry the Navigator. Prince Henry brought experts to his country and studied the sciences involved in exploration. He built an observatory to study the stars. Portuguese sea captains sailed their ships down the west coast of Africa, hoping to find a path to India and East Asia. They finally found the end of the African continent, the area called the Cape of Good Hope. It took the Portuguese only about 50 years to take control of the spice trade. They established trading colonies in Africa, the Persian Gulf, India, and China. Improvements in technology helped them succeed. One improvement was a new kind of ship. It could sail more easily through storms and winds. Other inventions, like the compass, allowed them to sail out of sight of land. The Portuguese also armed their ships with modern cannon. They used these weapons to battle Muslim and East Asian traders. The other European nations would not let Portugal control this spice trade for long, however. Spain's Queen Isabella and King Ferdinand agreed to provide ships, crew, and supplies for an exploration by an Italian named Christopher Columbus. Columbus thought the shortest way to reach the East was to sail west across the Atlantic Ocean. He was right, but he also was wrong. He believed the world was much smaller than it is. He did not imagine the existence of another continent and another huge ocean between Europe and East Asia. Columbus and a crew of 88 men left Spain on August 3, 1492, in three ships, the Niña, the Pinta, and the Santa Maria. By October 12th, the sailors stood on land again on an island that Columbus named San Salvador. He explored the island and the nearby islands of what are now known as Cuba and Hispaniola. He believed they were part of the coast of East Asia, which was then called the Indies. He called the people he found there Indians. Columbus left about 40 men on San Salvador Island to build a fort from the wood of one of the ships. He returned to Spain with birds, plants, gold, and people captured from the land he explored. Columbus was welcomed as a hero when he returned to Spain in March of 1493. Columbus sailed again across the Atlantic to the Caribbean 5 months later. He found that the fort built by his men had been destroyed by fire. Columbus did not find any of his men. But this time, he had many more men and all the animals and equipment needed to start a colony on Hispaniola. 7 months later, he sent five ships back to Spain. They carried Indians to be sold as slaves. Columbus himself also returned to Spain. Columbus made another trip in 1498. This time, he saw the coast of South America. But the settlers on Hispaniola were so unhappy with conditions in their new colony they sent Columbus back to Spain as a prisoner. Spain's rulers pardoned him. In 1502, Columbus made his final voyage to what some by then were calling the New World. He stayed on the island of Jamaica until he returned home 2 years later. During all his trips, Columbus explored islands and waterways, searching for that passage to the Indies. He never found it, nor did he find spices or great amounts of gold. Yet he always believed that he had found the Indies. He refused to recognize that it really was a new world. Evidence of this was all around him. Strange plants unknown in either Europe or Asia, and a different people who did not understand any language spoken in the East. Columbus's voyages, however, opened up the New World. Others later explored all of North America. Now you may be wondering about the name of this new land. If Christopher Columbus led the explorations, then why is it called America? The answer lies with the name of another Italian explorer, Amerigo Vespucci. He visited the coast of South America in 1499. He wrote stories about his experiences that were widely read in Europe. In 1507, a German mapmaker, Martin Waldseemüller, read Vespucci's stories. He decided that the writer had discovered the New World and thought it should be called America in his honor. And so it was. Spanish explorers sought to find gold and power in the New World. They also wanted to spread Christianity, which they considered the only true religion. The first of these Spanish explorers was Juan Ponce de León. He landed in North America in 1513. He explored the eastern coast of what is now the state of Florida. He was searching for a special kind of water that Europeans believed existed. They believed that this water could make old people young again. Ponce de León never did find the Fountain of Youth. Also in 1513, Vasco Núñez de Balboa crossed the Isthmus of Panama and reached the Pacific Ocean. In 1519, Hernán Cortés landed an army in Mexico. His army destroyed the ancient empire of the Aztec Indians. That same year, Ferdinand Magellan began his 3-year voyage around the world. And in the 1530s, the forces of Francisco Pizarro destroyed the Inca Indian Empire in Peru. 10 years later, Francisco Vázquez de Coronado had marched as far north as what is now the American state of Kansas, and then west to the Grand Canyon. About the same time, Hernando de Soto reached the Mississippi River. 50 years after Columbus first landed at San Salvador, Spain claimed a huge area of America. The riches of these new lands made Spain the greatest power in Europe and the world.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.